lately, I've been feeling incredibly uninspired. Sitting in a creative rut, one might say. I don't know what the issue is. Perhaps it's the stress of assignments and finals, existing in a new environment, the looming promise of winter break kicking every ounce of academic drive from my mind. I don't know, but it hasn't gone away, and try as I might, I've found thinking of new, let alone good, ideas to be a real challenge. So, instead of scraping together some haphazard concept and smushing it around until it fits the guidelines, I'm gonna move backwards. I'm gonna take a second, and instead of pressing forward, I'm gonna look back at a time when I was creatively fulfilled. The highs and lows of creativity isn't something I've ever been able to control or predict. For me, it moves in waves. I spend a few days, a week, maybe a month, with my brain bursting at the seams with ideas, spending all my time revising one idea until it's a perfect, shiny thing, and then that feeling falls away and I can't complete anything that isn't an extremely guided assignment. It's easier to ride the waves of creativity than to fight them, so that's what I'm doing. About a month ago, I was in a very creative headspace, and I wrote a few short stories. Nothing too interesting, nothing of note, and nothing that fit together in any way. Individual crumbs, rather than pieces of a puzzle. Frankly, the most interesting thing about these stories is the places they come from. One was about rain and how it gets a bad rap. That idea arose after a friend complained to me about having to walk to class in the rain. One was about windows and the things that exist behind them if you look too close. That one came from an offhand comment my film professor made about a movie he liked. Yet another described a man who smelled like the ocean. That stemmed from a hug I had with someone who smelled like lemons and clean laundry. The ideas come from nowhere, which is something else inherently annoying and magical about creativity. There's nothing I can do to inspire a story. They just appear. The one I'm going to read has existed in my mind for about 2 years now. It was originally inspired by a post I saw on my Instagram feed, and I wrote a crappy little draft on it. It sat on my drive for a long time, untouched, until about a month ago, when I was going through old pieces and I found it. The plot and one particular character in it still held potential, so I wrote it again. And again. And again. I pulled through the story with a fine-tooth comb, nitpicking every detail until I liked it. And for no real reason. The story was never going to go anywhere. I didn't know at the time it would be the subject of my final project, but I liked it. I liked the concept, and I knew it wouldn't be done until I did everything I could to finish it. And now I like it. So I sit patiently in my creative rut now, looking back at better times, waiting for something to come along to revive my spirit. Until then, here's my story, titled Time and a Tangerine. Hindsight is often clear as day. It's clearer than foresight, at least. It allows you to watch your actions again while still knowing you'll never be able to go back and change them. Given that, I think that, in hindsight, I perhaps swam out too far that day. The water started out warm and gentle, and I'm a strong swimmer. I never thought it would get so cold and rough so fast. But I went too far, and before I could turn back, the waves took me out even further. The last thing I remember was kicking so hard to try and find the ground, and the sickening feeling of water splashing against the inside of my lungs. And then a pair of hands, incredibly strong hands, grabbed me by the arms and lifted me from the water, dumping my limp body against a wooden deck. I vomited, wiped my eyes, and vomited again. The wood was uneven and craggy against my hands. The air reeked of salt and my vomit. My eyes burned worse than my throat, and I couldn't see more than the watery mess in front of me and a rich blue sky out ahead. Over my shoulder, a voice spoke out, although my ears were so waterlogged I couldn't hear. I corkscrewed a finger into one ear and tipped my head to the side until the water released itself. "Come again?" My voice hardly worked anyway. "Don't worry about the sick." The voice was deep, almost velvety. "The rain will wash it away." "Okay." Clearing up my vomit was the last thought on my mind. "Take your time. You took a lot of water." This time, an accent registered with the voice, a lilt I couldn't quite place. A mix of city and rural, something someone might imagine hearing in a coal mine if that person had never actually been in a coal mine. "Thank you." I wiped my eyes again, coughed twice, spit, and sat back on my hindquarters. My hair dripped salt water onto my ears, which dripped onto my neck, which ran down my back and mingled with the cold sweat I suppose you develop after almost drowning. "Where are you?" I asked of the voice. "Scoot back a few feet. I try to avoid stepping in sick when I can. I push myself back. The deck scraped against my bare legs, and I could feel the wood tear small cuts into my skin. "Is this okay?" I asked. "That's fine." Footsteps moved around me until the figure that belonged to the voice was in full view. A barefoot man in tattered blue jeans and a cable knit sweater that might have once been white but was now certainly a shade of beige. He stood above me, giving my puddle of vomit a wide berth. His flower white hair was plastered to his forehead, but besides that and some crinkles near the corner of his eyes, he resembled a man in his early 20s. And I could tell he was a friend. He reached out his hand to me. "Think you can stand? Temperature set to drop, and you'll be better off where it's dry." I took his hand, and he pulled me to my feet. As I stood, the water melted out of my remaining clogged ear, and I could hear just how deafeningly silent our surroundings were. The deck creaked and swayed below my feet, and beyond that, the sky and the sea were nearly the same shade of blue. "Come in here, use the railing," the man said, and he ushered me down a set of stairs into a warm one-room cabin below deck. I glanced around the space to give it a once-over. A small kitchen setup, a stool right next to it, two overstuffed armchairs facing each other in the corner, a neatly made cot in another spread with thick plaid blankets, a pile of wood at the foot of the bed, which seemed out of place because there was no fireplace in this cabin, and besides, lighting a fire in a wooden boat felt unwise. The cabin felt rather bare for being so small, but perhaps there was more to it that I wasn't seeing. Turning my head too fast made my eyes blur and my stomach churn anyway. The man gestured to the armchairs, his hand over my shoulder to help me stay upright as the ship swayed this way and that. "Take whichever chair you prefer. There should be a blanket somewhere back there. It'll help warm you up. You like tea?" I stumbled to the corner and sat in the armchair facing the cabin. A dark green wool blanket was tossed over one of the arms, and I pulled it taut around my shoulders. "What kind?" He made his way across the cabin to the kitchen, maybe 15 feet away, if that. "Let's see." He reached into a cabinet above the counter as a tea kettle started whistling and pulled down a dusty tin of tea bags. "Earl Grey, you fancy a drink with the Duke?" "Sure," I said. "Thank you." "Of course. You take milk or sugar?" "Just a spoon of sugar, if you can." He filled the mugs to the brim, placed them on a tray with a sugar bowl, the kettle, the tin of tea bags, and a pair of toothpicks, and sat in the chair opposite me, pulling the tray onto a small circular table between us. "I can never tell how much sugar to put, so just add what you fancy. Use the spoon in the bowl to stir, and take mine plain." I added sugar to my mug, stirred it, and took a small sip. The drink warmed me from the inside out, starting at my core and spreading to the very tips of my fingers and toes. It was unlike any drink I'd ever had. "Warms you up, doesn't it?" "Yes, thank you." "You're welcome," he said. "How'd you end up in that water?" I swallowed. "Swimming out too far, I think. Stupid of me." "Well, everyone's stupid sometimes. Builds character." I took a deeper drink of tea, and the warm feeling intensified. "What's your name?" He rubbed a hand over his face and through his hair, leaving it standing in little spikes. "To be honest with you, I forgot. A long time ago." He paused as he drank from his own mug. "I do remember that it rhymed with time, though, so that's what I call myself." "Time?" "Yours?" I told him. "Time's really an excellent name." I tried to think of names that might rhyme with the word time. Lion, Sign, Heim. But none of them were quite right for the man in front of me. "Do you live here?" He nodded. "Life can be a drag sometimes. You get fed up, you get bored. Most people, they don't do anything about it, but I got this boat, and I've been out on the water on and off for a long time now." I noticed that his accent got stronger the longer he talked. When he spoke in shorthand, it was hardly noticeable unless he landed on an affected word. "Are you alone?" I asked. Another nod. "Don't you have any family?" Time shook his head. "No, but I dock often enough in some new place, and I make friends there. I meet people on the water." "Do you keep in touch with them?" "I meet them, and I know them, and then we go our separate ways, and I don't see them again." "Isn't that lonely?" "Not to me," he said. "Even if it was, it'd be worth it. I'd rather be on this boat than anywhere else." "I think you'd like it, too." I shrugged. "Maybe, but my family would miss me. I don't think I'd leave them." "Well, if I'm ever back in your area, we can go sailing together. Take a week and I'll show you all the reasons I love being out here." I nodded. "I'd like that." "Good. For now, I'll take you home. I don't think you've got your sailing leg yet, and I don't want your family worrying." "Thank you. Do you know where it is, my home?" "I think so," Time said. "Okay." I leaned back into my chair and drained the rest of my tea. "What's your story, Time?" I asked. How exactly did you end up like this? I thought I just told you. What happened before you bought the boat? He chuckled. You really want to know, or are you just making small talk? I want to know. Tell me about yourself. Or give me some advice or something. Advice? Seems like you'd have good advice to give it all. Advice will cost you. Got anything to trade? I patted my pockets. No. Anything in here? Tom picked up my canvas backpack off the floor next to my chair. Fell off your back when I pulled you up. I unbuttoned the bag and sifted through it. Most of my things, my notebook, a book, a few paper bills, had dissolved. At the very bottom, covered in papery pulp, was a tangerine. A last-minute snack I'd tossed in with no real intention to actually eat it. How fancy does this thing need to be? I'll take anything, Time said. He jammed one of the two toothpicks on the tray between his teeth. Wiping off the tangerine as best I could with my damp shirt, I held it out to him. It's all I have. He took it off my palm, turned it over in his hand, and smiled. And it's more than enough. I get fresh fruit thrice a year if I'm lucky. This is a gift. With methodical slowness, Time picked at the tangerine, gently peeling away the skin and pulling off one segment at a time. I watched him place a segment on his tongue, suck out all the juice from it, and carefully chew the fruit, the toothpick still hanging off his lower lip. He repeated the process with the entire tangerine, pulling the skin away in one long, unbroken curl. After he swallowed his last piece, he looked back at me. Nothing's set in stone, but everything's set in dirt. You've got a dirt path ahead of you, and if you roll your wagon up and down the same path too many times, soon it'll be the only path you've got without any bumps. I listened to his words, played them once over in my mind, and then again, and again, and it still didn't make a lick of sense. What the hell does that mean? You got another tangerine? No. He grinned. Then no questions. Give me your mug. I did, and he replaced my tea bag and refilled it with water. You're tired, he said, standing. Finish your cup and hunker down. I'll wake you before we dock. Thank you, Time. He took the toothpick out of his mouth and stuck the fresh one in its place. You're welcome. You can give that advice to Chew, hmm? He winked and stepped away with the tray in his hands. I drifted in and out of sleep. Between the tea and the blanket and the warmth of the cabin, it was hard to stay awake for long. Time didn't talk much for the rest of the trip, except to offer me more tea or cream for my cut-up legs or bites of bread and dried fruit. He popped in and out of the cabin, spending half his time up on deck and the other half on a stool next to the counter in the kitchen. If I squinted, I could see he was whittling something, letting the shavings fall into a bowl at his feet. After a particularly long turn on the upper deck, Time called down to me. Almost back. Grab your things and come on up. The air outside was fresh and sharp with a bit of a chill to it. The sun was just barely setting on the horizon, washing the entire boat with a pale pink glow. I leaned over the railing and saw the shore, my shore, so very close. The rocks, the sand, and I could almost see the parking lot where I'd left my car. Time leaned next to me on the railing. You got folks waiting for you? Maybe. I came with my friends. I don't know if they're still there. I don't see them. Friends are a funny thing, aren't they? I nodded. They're a good thing, too. Maybe you'll be my first one in a while. That'd be good. I turned to Time. Thank you for everything. Take care, all right? Will I see you again? One day I'll be back, he answered. And then we'll go sailing. Deal. I stuck up my hand, and Time shook it. He pressed something into my palm as he did. And when I pulled away, I found myself holding the perfectly curled peel of my tangerine. What's this? A gift. Time raised his eyebrows. Bring more of those tangerines when you see me next. Of course. The shore crept closer to us, and I thought maybe if I jumped over the railing just right, I could land in the shallows and wade back to shore. I was about to mention the idea to Time when he spoke before I could. There's one more thing, he said. What? You need to wake up. I looked at him. What? His eyes stared into mine, shiny and so black I couldn't tell pupil from iris. You need to wake up. I don't want to scare you, but your friends need you. Your family needs you. You're not ready for the sea, but I'll be back. The last word left his lips, and my vision plunged into darkness as if I dove into Time's eyes. I could hear my friend shouting over and over and over again. And then my eyes opened, and I was on the sand, on my back, my body weak and heavy, with my two friends kneeling above me, shaking my shoulders. They were shouting my name. I'm awake! I choked out. Shut up, I'm awake! Oh, thank God, one said. We thought you were dead, the other shrieked. Because you weren't breathing and your heart wasn't beating and you were dead. You were dead for sure for like a minute. I coughed, my throat burning again. I'm fine. Look, I'm fine. I'm awake. Stop yelling. How long was I out? A few minutes. Not long. Really? Yeah. What happened? Nothing. I pressed the back of my head into the sand. Nothing. Nothing. Was it a dream? Was it real? Was I dead? What happened to time? Okay, well, tell us later. Come on, get up. Let's go. Here's your bag. As I opened my hand to grab my bag, something soft and orange fell out onto the sand. The tangerine peel. My heart dropped. In hindsight, I swam out way too far that day.